Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by True Botanicals. Get 15% off your first purchase at truebotanicals.com/accidental. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. This show is about you. It's about how to develop the skills you need to be prolific, brilliant, and healthy in life and in work. One of the things that can interrupt our ability to be effective, to bring ourselves fully to what we do, to have the right mindset is a transition. Any kind of transition, but especially a transition from being a member of a team into managing a team, maybe for the first time, or maybe not for the first time, but maybe you're moving to a different function and you're having to manage a team of people that maybe you've not been working with. It's a new role for you, new relationships for you. Any of these kinds of transitions into positions of authority over others can be really, really challenging, really difficult, and can disrupt our ability to focus and our ability to be present, our ability to do the things that we know we can do, right? It's just that we're trying to adapt to a new environment. Well, today's guest is Ryan Hawk. He has been hosting a show called The Learning Leader for a number of years, a podcast called The Learning Leader. He also has a new book called Welcome to Management. And on today's show, we're going to talk about some of the things he's learned both in his experience working with people and companies and also from interviewing so many brilliant leaders at the top of their game, what he's learned about how to bring the right skills, practices, and mindset to leadership every single day. Before we jump into that interview with Ryan, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by True Botanicals. So listen, you probably wear organic cotton. You probably eat organic food. Why do you use skincare products that are a cornucopia of chemicals? I mean, it's a good question, right? Life's full of tough choices and trade-offs, but what you put on your body shouldn't be one of them. Filled with natural and organic ingredients, True Botanicals skin and body products deliver results without toxins. True Botanicals uses the latest scientific advances and centuries-old botanical extracts to create all-natural formulas in their products, like their hydrating face cleanser, face oil for aging skin, and nutrient face mist. Every True Botanicals product is made safe, certified, made without 5,000 plus known toxic ingredients. But unlike most non-toxic products, True Botanicals solutions actually work to repair skin issues. They work with researchers at leading universities, including Carnegie Mellon and Cornell, to identify nourishing botanical extracts rich in antioxidants, vitamins, and essential fatty acids to develop potent formulas that work better than leading beauty brands. True Botanicals has conducted 3 independent clinical studies, and in all 3 trials, True Botanicals outperform creme de la mer and proactive products. So whether you're looking for an effective anti-aging regime, you're seeking a sensitive skin-safe solution, you're battling pregnancy hormones, or you're struggling with acne-prone skin, True Botanicals has natural formulation that will protect and nourish your skin. You've got to try True Botanicals for yourself. You can get 15% off your first purchase at truebotanicals.com/accidental. Again, that's get 15% off your first purchase at truebotanicals.com/accidental. truebotanicals.com/accidental. And we thank True Botanicals for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's so great to have on the show today, Ryan Hawk. Ryan is the host of the wildly popular podcast, The Learning Leader, but he's also the author of a brand new book called Welcome to Management, which is kind of like a really practical nuts and bolts guide to what to do when you're promoted into a new role. And so I'm really excited to talk with him today. Ryan, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Todd, you've been doing this for 15 years. 15? One of the originals when it comes to podcasting. It's obviously my huge, huge honor to be here, man. Thank you for having me.
Oh, that's cool. Thanks, man. Yeah, I disavow anything I did before 2010, right? Like, I don't tell anybody about, you know, but yeah, it's been around for 15 years, so.
I'm just saying you're real early into this world now that is, certainly there's a lot of people getting into it every second of every day. If you look at the stats of podcasts, and you've been doing it when there was just probably what you, Bill Simmons, and maybe Joe Rogan was watching and thinking about starting a podcast. That was pretty much it when you got going. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And those guys have done a little better than I have, but that's okay. That's good. All right. So tell me enough about my background. This isn't about me, it's about you. So, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get into, podcasting and then obviously writing books and all that? Like, what is your background?
Yeah. So I grew up, and really, Todd, the only thing I cared about was playing sports. I know you got a hoops background, and I played all the sports, but focused eventually on football. Got a scholarship to play in college, and played quarterback at Miami University, which I know you're fond of. And then ended
love
up.
Love and honor.
Yes. I still love everything about Miami. I just spoke with another former Miami grad who played sports there earlier today, actually. Love everything about Miami, but I happen to be the exact same age and play the same position as another quarterback who came to Miami with me named Ben Roethlisberger. Just so happened that Ben somehow eked out the starting job and beat me out. And
you could be the starting quarterback for the Steelers and he could be writing books right now.
I know, like, but
it could have easily gone the other way.
Easily. So I elected then, instead of changing positions or being his backup, I elected to transfer. So I finished my career at Ohio University, played there for a few years, played in the Arena Football League for a few years, then left that, got into the profession of selling, and got promoted. Made a ton of mistakes when I became a new manager, got my MBA, considered going back to get furthering my education after getting my MBA, but ultimately decided that I wanted to create my own form of a leadership PhD program. And I thought a great, at least at the time, this is over 5 years ago, a good way to do that and for me to choose the specific professors that I wanted to learn directly from was, what if I created a podcast that would give me a platform so that I could reach out to people like you, because you've been on my show, and others who are intellectually curious, that have are masters of their specific domain. What if I go directly to them, try to have a long-form conversation, and then publish that as the Learning Leader Show, me being the leader who was focusing on just being a constant learner, and maybe then others could benefit along with me. And so that's really how it started. It was a side hustle, a hobby, something I did for fun 5 years ago when I was in the middle of my corporate America career. And I would have never envisioned that a few years into that, I would have been able to leave corporate America and now do this full time, which is podcasts, speak, help with leaders in various companies, run leadership circles, and now I've written my first book.
And one of the great things about hosting a podcast, as you mentioned, is that you get to talk with people who are absolutely at the top of their game, right? Mm-hmm. And you get to interview leaders who have led, you've interviewed Stanley McChrystal, right? You've interviewed top sports coaches, top business leaders. I mean, you've sort of had the opportunity to sit at the feet of some of the greatest leaders in the world and to hear their insights and their perspectives. And that's what I found really fascinating about this book, is that it's a great combination of your perspective as somebody who's kind of been in the trenches, and you kind of know what it feels like to have to lead a team. But also, like, infused with this wisdom from people who have been at the absolute top of the industry in terms of their leadership responsibility. And so I want to dive into some of the content of the book. There really are kind of three parts to the book. The book is sort of broken up into, leading yourself, building your team, and leading your team. I want to start by just talking about what you describe as the circle or the cycle of learning. Mm-hmm. What is the cycle of learning, and why is it important for leaders?
As I was taught, as I was meeting with all of these incredible leaders on my show, they were using words like framework or standard mode of operation, operating procedures. And I was thinking more about that, they were describing the methods in which they make decisions, how they choose to behave on a daily basis. And I realized for myself that I did not really have any mode of operation. I didn't have a framework for behavior, for making decisions. And that's what leaders have to do. And so I needed to really go inside myself and reflect and think a little bit deeper of, what do I believe? What do I think? How do I want to operate on a daily basis? And so really, this framework you're talking about is four parts for me that every day this is the makeup of an excellent day for me. If I can do all four of these things, one, I need to be a consumer of knowledge. I need to really fuel my intake engine, have long form one-on-one conversations with people smarter than me, read books, listen to podcasts, watch TED Talks, that type of thing. Two, though, you can't just be a learner. You have to be a doer. We are who we are in practice, not in theory. So we actually have to go out and do it. So the second part is this experimentation phase. So don't just learn about it, but then go and do it, be about it. Third, we have to take a step back, reflect, analyze what worked, what didn't, what should we keep doing, what should we stop doing based on what we've learned and what we've experimented with. And then fourth, which is a form of what we do when we speak or podcast or work with leadership teams, we need to go out and teach, because I've learned that some of the greatest learners in the world are teachers. Some of the greatest forms of learning in my life were when I had to prepare for a big keynote speech or prepare to be a guest on a podcast or prepare to help somebody when I'm working with a leader, perhaps in a one-on-one situation. Through the process of preparing for that, I learned so much. You don't fully know what you know about a subject until you sit down and try to write about it. And you know this better than anybody from writing books. You don't fully know what it's like to herd tigers, to use the metaphor, until you're trying to write an entire book about it. And then you get that first rough draft. You're like, oh God, I only know like 50% of what I thought I knew. And then you keep working at it. You keep working at it. And before you know it, you really start to have an understanding of what you know and what you believe and what you think, because you've done that internal hard work to write it down, to think about it. And so that's why the teaching phase is so important of that, because it forces the leader, and in this case me, to get clarity of belief, of thought, of understanding what I know. And that equates a really good day for me if I'm spending time in each of those four sections.
So let's talk about that then on a practical level for the person. Let's say they're leading a marketing organization, or they have a team of, you know, computer coders, right? Like they're working on software for a particular part of the organization or something, and they're leading this team. How would the cycle of learning play out for them on a daily basis? What might that look like for a manager?
Yeah, manager of a marketing group, as you mentioned. So I think that person should be spending parts of their day where they're trying to better understand the industry where they work. So they're reading a lot. They're becoming a subject matter expert when it comes to marketing in this case. In addition, if you're leading a team, then you also need to become a subject matter expert of managing people, of leading people. And so part of that intake engine would be fueled on a daily basis by understanding your industry, understanding the more in depth when it comes to marketing, as well as what it means to be a manager, what it means to be a leader. So that's where that constant intake engine needs to be filled. Two, then, what have I learned based upon my reading, based on that knowledge gathering, based on that consumption that I could then implement into my day as a marketing manager? So something that you've picked up, you implement it, and then you went and tried it. So perhaps it's a new technique to have one-on-one meetings with your direct reports, or perhaps it's a new technique with how to run more effective meetings where action actually happens, something along those lines. Then after you've done your experiment based on what you've learned, whether you sit with a mentor or do it by yourself, you're going to reflect on that experience, on that experimentation, what worked, what didn't, what should I keep doing, what should I stop? So it continuously goes, and then you're going to teach that what you've learned to others, perhaps someone else you mentor, or even another person on your team that you're looking to help grow into a leadership role or grow into a marketing position. So I think that's one way you could put that into play for you. The other thing I encourage people, though, is this is a best practice for me. Like my friend Jay Akunzo says, create the best practices for you. I like to share the fact that this framework exists as a way of saying these are, I think, important to have in your life. It doesn't mean you have to copy mine or model mine. It just means I think you should create one for you. You're welcome to steal, take, use whatever it is that I do and implement it for you. But I think at a minimum, it's a worthy use of time to create the best framework for you. And I hope me sharing this is something that I do and that I've picked up from others could be helpful for you as well.
That's great. Oh, well, let's talk about that as it relates to skill development, because one of the pieces of advice that you give in the book is we need to build skills to do the job, not to get the job. I thought that was a really profound distinction. Can you dive into that a little more?
Yeah. So the reason that I was sharing this was, for example, one of the aspects of my job as a manager was I wanted to help for the people that came to me to say, Ryan, I really want to be a manager of a team someday. I really want to be a leader someday. How can you help me? And so I would institute processes for those people that raise their hand that say they want that, to say, okay, we're going to do some extra work on the side, where I would actually put them in the mode of doing the job. So for example, I worked in an inside, so I worked at LexisNexis in a telephonic sales organization. So we were smiling, dialing, pounding the phones, where you'd make 60, 70 cold calls a day, calling on attorneys, trying to sell them online legal research to help them be better serve their clients. So what we do, we're regularly making phone calls. And if somebody said, hey, I want to be a manager someday, one of the big aspects of managing, at least in that environment, was having these one-on-one coaching sessions, reviewing sales calls, right? A normal type of a management job. You're reviewing the calls, you're offering coaching to the people that are on your team. So the people that would raise their hand, I would bring them into my office and say, listen, we're actually going to have you be the manager of some of the newer reps today. You're going to listen to their calls, and then you're going to actually coach them through their sales calls. Once you are done coaching them, as I'm monitoring all this, once you are done coaching them, then it's just going to be me and you in the room, and I'm going to coach you. I'm going to train the trainer, coach the coach type behaviors. So when they then go into the interview process, when somebody says, I can't hire you, you have no experience. And they say, you're right, I don't have any experience. However, here are some of my experiences that I went through with my manager to help me prepare to actually do this job. I was coached by him, and these are some of the things that I did. This is some of the things that I've learned from him. So I would try to bring them in on through working extra to say, I've actually done some of the job. I've done some of the harder parts of the coaching role, and my manager has helped develop me, and this is what I've learned from it. So I try to help overcome with the experience thing, because everyone runs in that problem. Well, nobody has experience the first time they get promoted, so I try to help them overcome that hurdle and actually get good at doing the job before it's their job to do.
That's great. I want to shift to talking about culture, Ryan, because this is something that I hear a lot of managers talk about, something I talk about a lot with organizations, right? It's sort of a topic of great interest to people. And you talk about how there are three core elements of culture. You talk about trust, vulnerability, and ownership. Could you just dive into each of those a little bit and help us understand what you mean by those three words, trust, vulnerability, ownership?
Trust. So I think of character and competence, which you've probably read from The Speed of Trust. The Coveys have written a lot about that, because I think trust decreases transaction cost. I was told that by the general Stanley McChrystal. And I firmly believe that. Think about an organization you've worked in that had an immense amount of trust. And then think about the speed in which you are able to act and make decisions and behave. Now, conversely, think about maybe a highly bureaucratic organization where there was very little trust, where you needed to get steps of approval from 13 people to make one small decision. It was painfully slow. So when you build a culture of trust, I see that as speed. Trust equals speed to me. And in this day and age, with how we need to adapt with a changing marketplace, we need to be able to act fast. So I think that's huge. Vulnerability is a big reminder for me. Is a great boss I had. Her name was Dustin Kim, Ivy League educated MBA. So comes in that is probably the smartest person in every room, but was never afraid to be vulnerable in the moment. Share with us the real life challenges she was dealing with as a mom, or even parts of her job that she didn't like, even some things about the boss that she didn't fully agree with, but was battling with, but was willing to share and be truly vulnerable. I thought that took amazing courage, and she created a team, and I was a director at this time, so we had kind of higher level people in the room. She created a team of people that said, I will do whatever it takes to help you, because she led with vulnerability. We trusted her. We thought she was highly courageous. And that's the type of leader that I want to be. That's the type of leader that I signed up to commit to, because as you also probably read, I am certain that compliance can be commanded, but commitment cannot. Mm-hmm. And I commit to people that I trust. I commit to people that are willing to be vulnerable, because I think that takes confidence and courage, and those are attractive qualities. And we want to be the type of leader that people commit to, not the one that we comply to. You comply if you have a regular job. You comply to your boss because you have to. Because you don't want to get fired, because you want the next paycheck. But there's a difference in the boss that you choose to commit to, because they've built the type of place where you want to help them. You want to help get their mission and vision on track. And then ownership really is about people who raise their hand and say, I want to have responsibility for this. And when it comes to people on my team, I want those types to say, I want to have a say in what's going to happen with my goals. I want to have a say in what's going, because as James Kerr said in Legacy and told me on my show, right, people are much more willing to go after goals if they are their goals, right? And that also creates ownership and empowerment in your team if you give them agency and decision-making for how they are going to operate. And so that's, I want those people that are going to raise their hand to say, like, I like that responsibility. I crave that responsibility. I want that responsibility. And to me, when you can combine those three things, where there's high trust, people are willing to be vulnerable, and people raise their hand to take ownership, that in my experience has created a culture where people are, they're excited to do great work on a daily basis.
That's fantastic. What do you say to a manager who says, like, well, okay, so I can't control the culture. I'm just one tiny cog in a giant machine, you know, there are so many forces beyond my control. Like, what do you say to someone who might be a little skeptical about their ability to influence the culture?
I wouldn't, and this is very common, especially like in places where I've worked too. And I've had the same question for people. And what I found though, is you have more power than you think. And I want you to use that power for good. The cool thing that can happen is if you're able to build your culture within your little team in this huge giant organization, but you build your culture, people start kind of looking over their shoulder or looking sideways at you and your team and this unique team that you built. So like one example from the book, my team grew really close because I happened to just get lucky, Todd. I got very lucky with a few of the first hires. I didn't do anything to deserve these guys, but they built this culture of ownership, of trust, and they built things like they made a flag. We had a name. We had a logo. Our logo was a hawk with a rusty sword to emphasize the fact that hawk happened to be my name, but also the fact that we had grit, this rusty sword, say like we go to battle. And they even created a cheer and a trophy and all these cool little aspects of it that built it up, that said that team's different, that culture's different, that regardless of what's going on up top. And what happened is some of the senior leaders then would come to our team and say, what have you guys done here? How have you set this up? How can we do this more broadly within our organization? And it ultimately ended up creating two promotions for me, even though I was just simply the little part of the vessel that had it happen, but I happened to be the manager of the team, so I got more credit than I deserved. And I was getting promoted because I was fortunate to have these great members of my team who took ownership, created the culture, and we did it from within. And then it started at this tiny little team and started moving more broadly because people noticed. And by the way, you have to perform, right? You got to produce, right, you got to do good work, you got to get the results, which we did. And then that started spreading from within instead of spreading from top down, and almost spread it from bottom up. And that can be more of like a grassroots style that's super rewarding. Don't get me wrong though, it didn't happen overnight. It took years, but it's pretty neat to see that kind of grow out into the organization from within, as opposed to just the CEO talking top down.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Okay, I want to ask you about one more thing in the book that there are many of them, but there's one more thing that really sort of caught my attention. It's you advise people that you have to pay attention to any notable constraints that you have to manage around. I thought that was a really interesting observation, and it's something I think a lot of people don't do. I mean, they don't really pay attention. They feel the constraints, but they don't really pay attention to them. So what are some tips that people can apply to help them do that more consistently?
Well, one of the aspects of this, and this is part of kind of the management section of the book, because management is such a bad word, as you know, Todd, because we're in this space, and that's partially why I left that word in the title of my book. One, because I think it's accurate, and two, because I don't want that to be a bad word. Management, especially if you're a new manager, the reason you have a job is because there are constraints. if there weren't budgets, if there weren't any type of constraints, then if they didn't need someone to be a steward of the resources, you wouldn't need to exist, right? You would just say, oh, let's just go to it. Oh, there's no deadlines. There's no budget constraints. No, that's why management actually is there. So be grateful for the fact that you have these constraints and figure out a way to work within them. And also seek out and get creative of ways that you can find others in your organization to help you get it done. The best managers I've had, they had built great alliances and helped us collaborate across the business. I think there's a term called boundarylessness, which is a weird word, but it was used, I think, to describe good managers, that because they could find resources and people that they had built real, genuine relationships with. For example, like in a sales world where I was, sometimes there's budgetary constraints, and some of the better managers had built relationships with people in different parts where they're able to get marketing dollars. They're able to get dollars from product. They have good relationships with sales operations, so they can get extra dollars there. And before you know it, most managers aren't figuring out how to work within the constraints. And this one has built these dynamic, real relationships, and it's made the lives of the people on their team much better for it. And I think that's one of the examples of let's get creative. Let's figure out how to work within the constraints, build real relationships, and all in an effort to help the people that you're leading.
Such good advice. And the book is full of practical, tactical advice like that. Ryan Hawk is the author of Welcome to Management. He's the host of the Learning Leader Show. Ryan, where can people go and find you online?
Todd, can I say something before I get real quick?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So you may not even remember this. I've said it a few times, but as I was in the process of beginning to write my book, I called you and we talked about the book writing process. And since you'd written multiple books, and we have a mutual friend, Greg Meredith, and he had initially connected us, and I told you what I was going to write about. And essentially what I was going to write was a reference book of all the great quotes and some of my explanations from people on my podcast. And I think that would have been a fine book. And you, even though we weren't friends yet, we were just kind of were acquaintances, a friend of a friend, you had the guts and the willingness and the care and the love, I would say, to say, hey, you can do that and that would be fine. But, and to use the metaphor you've written about a number of times, but cover bands don't change the world. And I view you as a guy who wants to do that. And I think you should. And I think you have the talent and the ability to do that. You should not write a reference book. You should share your voice. Say what you think, and then use the interviews, use the quotes as color and flavor to add to what you believe and what you think. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but that conversation literally changed my life in a way that I know you don't even realize it, but it changed how I thought about my entire business, not just writing this book, of saying, yeah, you're right. Cover bands can make a decent, fine living, but they don't change the world. I think you are an original and can be. You got to work at it, and it's really hard, and it's a much harder way to do it, but I think you should. And because of that, I like changed the trajectory of how I decided to operate. And I just want to thank you publicly, because you certainly probably didn't realize at the time. You were just being nice and kind and thoughtful, but you had a huge and still have a huge impact on my life, man. And I just want to make sure that is out there, that you get acknowledged for that, because you're probably doing it every day for many people, but you did it for me one-on-one, and it meant a lot to me.
Oh man, that means a lot. That really does. Yep. Thank you for saying that. And I'm just thrilled watching the trajectory of your book and your podcast. And it's just been so great to see you like really step in and own your space. Like you're, you know, like you should, because yeah, you're so talented. And so really, I'm just really excited for you. And everyone should go pick up a copy of Welcome to Management. I don't care if you've been leading teams for 15 years, you're going to find stuff in this book that's going to make you think differently, and is going to make you a better leader, a better manager in your organization. So Ryan, where can people go find you if they want to find
you? Yeah, learningleader.com. I pretty much have everything. If you happen to be listening on a phone, you can text the word learners with an S to 44222. Learners to 44222. If you're listening on a phone, that kind of gets you all my stuff, and we can get in contact. But Todd, thanks so much for having me, man.
Awesome, man. Thanks for being here. As always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.